Welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast. Indeed, it is Quality Hang. Ooh. I am Rod Brooks, and as always, I am joined on this podcasting adventure by my partner in crime, the King of New Orleans. He is Marcus Osborne. What's up, man?
What's good, Daddy-O?
As
I said to you, I'm lamenting the fact that I have not been able to enjoy Mardi Gras at all. And I am not thrilled about that.
That's a damn shame. It's a you are in New Orleans. You are in a place that is literally designed around having a good time.
Yeah.
That's New Orleans' whole get down. And you, as the King of New Orleans, are unable to actually have a good time in a place that is designed for you to have a good time. That is a crime, my friend. It is a crime against nature and all that is good.
Yeah, it's a shame that the King of New Orleans cannot be out enjoying Mardi Gras with his subjects.
Uneasy is the head that wears the crown. They don't tell you this in monarch school. They don't tell you when you become the master of all you survey, there is no downtime to enjoy all that you survey.
Goddamn right. Goddamn right.
But when you're the jester like me, every minute's a party, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Now, sure, the king may lop off my head for his own enjoyment. So, yes, there is danger at every turn. But when you're the jester, you're just out there wearing the pointy shoes with the bell on the end of them. Like, hey, man, this is all good.
That's what it is. Thing has really sort of irked the shit out of me. Like, wow, my very first time actually being able to be here for Mardi Gras from beginning to end, and I will not be able to enjoy a single moment of it.
And this is the final weekend, right? As we record this on Thursday, February 16th. Is this the final
home
weekend?
Stretch. Fat Tuesday is the 21st.
This upcoming Tuesday, and then Ash Wednesday, when it's all over, is the next day, the following Wednesday. So,
and that's a rapidy, baby. Ah, I'm so pissed off about that whole thing. I'm quitting jobs because of it, Rod.
Take this job and shove it. Now, how you gonna quit? I believe we've talked about this on a prior podcast, but it's worth talking about again. How do you quit? Do you do it in the very professional way? Well, you know, gentlemen, this is not going to work out, and I just wanted to give you guys 2 weeks' notice so you can find a suitable replacement and we can end this amicably. Or do you come in there and be like, fuck y'all, fuck this job, I'm finna steal some office supplies, I'm out. How are you gonna go out?
That is a great question. It actually depends. Like, the people these are decent people I'm working with. It all depends on my mood and when it's done. If by chance I find something else that I want to do, I can go in and say, listen, I'm giving y'all 2 weeks notice, everything is gravy. If, on the other hand, I come in one night and some customer or some staffer is giving me some bullshit, it might be one of those, you know what, I'm out. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. That whole, I might even get on the mic and do some social media worthy quitting.
Okay. Let me just say this. However you decide to let them know that you don't want to work there anymore, of course I'm going to support you. You the homie. But if you do decide to put people on blast, could you please make sure that this is recorded?
Yes.
Turn the camera, turn the phone vertically, or turn it horizontally, so we could get it in landscape. If you can make sure that the sound quality is great, I would really appreciate it.
You got that, baby.
Thank you, my man.
That's gonna be everywhere. Maybe I'll go viral. you want to get us some publicity for Quality Hang? Watch me.
Like a Cowboy fan destroying his television after another yet inevitable playoff loss. Marcus quitting his job. It's going to go viral. We will all be the beneficiaries of it.
The shit. Bro.
Let's get started, as we always do, with lifestyle. And unfortunately, we can't keep the laughs and the yucks going because – and I don't say this to make light or to be flippant in any way, shape, or form, but oh boy, another mass shooting in the United States of America. Not one, actually.
Yes.
Multiple mass shootings.
Yeah. It's insane. I opened up the computer machine this morning and I look and there's the headline, a mass shooting at an El Paso mall. I'm like, wait a minute. We just did this last week at Michigan State. And then I think just a few weeks before that, there was something else in Michigan. Or maybe it was Michigan State. Like, what the fuck? And it's not even, it barely registers a blip anymore, right? I mean, this used to happen and the news would stop. It would be breaking news. CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and the entire country would stop because it's so commonplace now. It's basically become part of American culture.
We have just, here's how the mass shooting thing, how we have been so desensitized to it and how we're so used to it. Remember the Buffalo shooting?
Yeah, yeah.
Where the white kid walked into a black supermarket, a supermarket in a black neighborhood in Buffalo, killed 10 people, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep.
He just got sentenced to life in prison without parole. That's how quickly that happened. But since that Buffalo shooting, we've had the 4th of July shooting in Evanston, Illinois, north of Chicago. The Michigan State shooting earlier this week. We had the what's the one I'm missing? Oh, the nightclub shooting in Colorado Springs.
Yes.
The LGBTQ nightclub shooting in Colorado Springs.
Yes.
We had one in, was it in San Jose? No, it wasn't in San Jose. It was in Half Moon Bay in Northern California.
And there weren't there two up there in like the same week?
I believe there was, I want to say there was one in San Jose. Yeah, it was a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I'm rattling off, unfortunately, all of these mass shootings, while I'm sure I'm forgetting far too many mass shootings that have happened. I rattle all of these off to say, this is just who we are as a country.
It is,
We are used to it. We are not surprised by it. Because we are desensitized to it, that doesn't mean that we are not fearful. It doesn't mean that we are not scared. It doesn't mean that we are not concerned. But we know now that this is a seemingly uniquely American problem that is not going anywhere. And I wish I could remember who said this because it's the absolute truth. And I want to give this person their shine for saying something that is 100% true. Once we were okay with children getting killed at Sandy Hook, that's when we crossed the Rubicon in this country in terms of mass shootings and gun violence. When we normalized Sandy Hook, when we didn't start just taking guns from everybody, when we didn't do the minimum after Sandy Hook, that's when we as a country were doomed to live with mass shootings the way we're living with them right now. We were okay with little babies being slaughtered by guns, and we didn't do a damn thing about it.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, Rob, because, I mean, not only were we okay, we were, more than any other mass shooting, we had a huge segment of the population literally saying it didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
It did.
They're still saying it. They're still saying it. The loudest, stupidest voice, Alex Jones, who, by the way, should be under the jail. But he's been sued into oblivion. I don't know how much of that money they're actually going to get from him. But the loudest voice is basically still saying that shit. And others who listen to him or who think like him are still saying the same repugnant shit that Sandy Hook didn't happen.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to take. Obviously, I don't think it. And for me, I'm not even the person who's saying take everybody's guns away. Like, we're long past the point where we can take everybody's guns away.
Yes.
But at the very least, we can do something about the ammunition and limit the sales of ammunition to civilians. Cut back. Keep restricted to military and officials, etc. And don't even get me started on assault weapons.
Yeah. Well, because you're right. A gun is worthless without bullets. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem with that is that you have feckless politicians who are afraid. Either they're taking money from the gun lobby, from the NRA, or they're afraid to be seen in certain parts of this country. In the Bay Area, you can get away with it because it's the Bay Area. But in many parts of this country, if you are seen as an anti-gun politician or someone who is going to come and take my guns or whatever, then that's death for you as a politician in terms of getting reelected. So since every politician's goal is not to help the public, it's to get reelected, they are going to make sure that they don't do anything that will make them, in a lot of people's eyes, unelectable. But here's another thing that we don't talk about when it comes to guns in this country. Everybody love guns.
Yeah.
Everybody love guns. Men love guns. Mm-hmm. Women love guns. White people love guns. Yep. Black people love guns.
Yep.
Our Latin brothers and sisters, they love guns.
Yep.
Our Asian brothers and sisters, they love guns. This is not just a white thing. This is not just a black thing. This is a United States thing. And in the United States, pardon me, because we are so racially diverse, our Muslim brothers and sisters, they love guns. Because we have so many people of so many different ethnicities who love guns, when you start to talk about regulating gun sales or regulating ammunition sales, you don't have just what we think of as your white redneck going, well, they're trying to take my guns.
Yeah.
You got black folks going, hey, man, they trying to take my gun. You got Latin folks going, hey, man, they trying to take my gun. And on and on and on and on down the ethnic color spectrum, if you will. We love guns in this country.
Yeah.
So when you start talking about regulating guns, you are literally talking about regulating something that every American, I'm being hyperbolic here, but you know I'm close. Every American digs their gun. If you got a gun, you dig your gun.
And the thing is, based on every single bit of research, 80% of Americans are fine with gun regulation. It's the politicians who are the ones who keep this shit going. But even the people with guns are, not all of us need to have these. And we should have some kind of regulation. Like the country itself, even though we love our guns, most of the nation is okay with some regulation of weaponry.
Yeah.
It really is the politicians who keep this thing alive as a wedge issue, a culture issue. And until we get folks, none of this shit is changing. It's just
I would like to believe you that 80% of 350 million people in this country would like some regulation. I don't know if I buy that. I really don't. Man, we are armed to the teeth in this country.
And if people
really cared about gun violence, we wouldn't be armed to the teeth as we are in this country.
Well, most people with guns are fairly responsible. Like most, there's basically a gun and a half for every single human being in this country. And the people who are, doing these mass shootings, these are the outliers. I do believe, and I believe the research, every time they do research on whether or not people will have an issue with some kind of gun restriction, gun law, gun register, assault weapons ban, those types of things are actually popular with the public.
But here's the problem, though. It's not just about the mass shootings. And the mass shootings are frightening because you feel as though it could happen to you.
Yeah.
Any place, any time.
Mm-hmm.
But mass shootings, as much as they seem to happen, they're rare compared to everyday run-of-the-mill, if you will, gun violence.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about people who have guns in their homes who say, I'm a responsible gun owner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most gun violence situations happen between people who know each other, between family, between friends. And these are people who consider themselves to be responsible gun owners, but they have a gun in a home, but all of a sudden there's a disagreement. There's a disagreement that's fueled by alcohol or fueled by drugs or fueled by jealousy or fueled by mental illness. And that gun is being used by a supposed, you know, self-said responsible gun owner. That gun is used to kill a wife. Yeah. That gun is used to kill another family member or someone close to that family. Or that gun is found by a child and is accidentally discharged and it kills a brother, a sister, or another child in the house. Or you have a gun in the house, and then next thing you know, a six-year-old takes it to fucking school and shoots a teacher, as we had in Virginia a few weeks ago. That's the problem with the guns in the country.
And
the mass shootings, that's kind of the unfortunate eventual consequence of having, in essence, unregulated guns awash in this country. But the real gun violence problem is the everyday gun violence that happens because, as you said, there's a gun and a half for every person in this country. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, as you mentioned, the majority of these people think, I'm a responsible gun owner. Well, these are the people that end up shooting somebody with the gun that they say they responsibly own.
I know for a fact that if I still had guns, and especially as a younger person, I was definitely into having my guns. But I know if I actually had guns around, I could actually see myself like being on the road one day. It's not even funny, but I can see myself being on the road one day, just having a road rage episode with somebody.
And that's the problem. That's the problem with guns.
There's
everybody's got a gun, but you can't tell me that everybody is a responsible gun owner because they're not.
There's something about a gun that does something, and I've said this to people for years, and people are like, you're crazy. No, I'm like, when you have a gun, it does something to you psychologically.
That's wild.
It does something to you, especially if you're carrying it around with you. It does something to you psychologically. And for me, I'll be honest with you, my issue is people being allowed to carry guns around. Churches. What the fuck are we doing? Like, there's states literally fighting to have laws. I just saw, I can't even remember, was it Florida? I think it's Florida. Of course, Florida, where they're actually saying no permits at all needed for anything.
That's nope. Texas or Florida. Either way, you're good. But I know for a fact, Texas. Once you're 18, you can carry a gun. No training, no license, no nothing.
Yeah. So there, I think it's Florida where they're saying you don't. Not only do you not have to, you don't have to have a concealed carry permit. Like nothing. And you can go anywhere with them. We're literally trying to go back to the Wild West.
I'm very dubious of that 80% responsible gun owner thing. It's not true. It's 100% not true.
Well, I can't say it's not true based on the research and based on what they say. These folks are like, these people seem to be okay with some sort of gun regulation.
I ain't buying it. I'm not buying it. If there's one thing we've learned over the past, let's just say 10 years, the past couple of presidential election cycles, that polling in this country is not necessarily as spot on as we were once led to believe it is. So, if I'm wrong and it's 80%, okay, great. Then that's something good and that's something positive out of this completely horrific gun crisis that we are in this country. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm skeptical.
I have to say, just in my own experience, I've never met anybody who is like, nah, nothing. I don't want any kind of laws or regulation. I've never met that person.
Oh, those people exist, my man.
Oh, I know they exist.
Oh,
I know they exist, but what I'm saying is the majority of people, and that's what we're talking about, the majority of people are fine with some sort of regulation of guns.
80, but the majority would be 51%.
Let me see.
Overwhelming majority, 8 out of 10 people in a gun crazed country like this. I could be wrong, but I don't know, man. Oh, that reminds me.
Yeah.
I'm completely taking a left turn.
Yeah.
Man, we lost another great hip hop
artist. Oh, man.
Fuck, man. Trugoy the Dove, Plug 2. Dave of De La Soul.
Yeah.
Yeah, he passed away earlier this week, 53, 54 years old. Reportedly, he was dealing with an illness. But the trio of De La Soul with Pasta Noose, the brother with the glasses, Trugoy the Dove, Dave, who, as I mentioned, passed away earlier this week. DJ. That trio, just like Run DMC, no longer with Jam Master Jay, just like the Beastie Boys, no longer with MCA. Just like Tribe is no longer with us because Fife Dawg passed away years ago. He lost soul, man. No more, dog. And here's the fucked up part about it. They just got control of their music back. De La Soul's music will be on streaming services, I believe, on March 3rd, man.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be around for it. That was a bummer.
Yeah, dude. De La Soul. There's a period in the late 80s, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, Jungle Brothers, the Native Tongues, that crew was called. I was all over it. And
was Moni Love in there? Was Latifah in there?
Latifah, yeah. Busta Rhymes was even in that crew. What was it? Leaders of the New School.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is it's so weird because it seems like he was so young. But it also, when these happen with people from our childhood, it just makes me feel like, damn, I realize my mortality.
Yeah, man, it sucks to see people that you grew up with, and we grew up with De La Soul, even though we didn't know them.
Yeah.
We grew up with them, and because you met them at that time in your teenage years or your early 20s, you associate them with that time, and you're sort of stuck perpetually in that time of, well, I'm 18, I'm 22 years old. Well, as we know, Father Time is undefeated. This planet is going to continue to go around the sun, and every 365 days another year goes by. And eventually you end up, you know, in your late 40s and 50s, and this is a point in adulthood where people around that age pass away, and it is still far too young, but, you know, people get ill, people, you know, after years of not taking care of yourself, and I'm not saying that that's what happened with Trugoy, but, you know, these things happen, and people pass away, and it's just another shock to the system, and it's just another reminder that tomorrow ain't promised today.
Yeah.
And it does suck that our hip-hop icons, and he was an icon, these people, unfortunately, don't get a chance to grow old. And while that makes me incredibly sad, it makes me happy that the ones who are still around, I don't know, I'm blanking on his name. I can see his face, like Chuck D.
Yeah.
Glad that he's still around. Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned his name. Glad that he's still around. And many other names who I am struggling to recall at this moment. It sucks that we have lost so many.
Heavy D was one of my faves. And I was like,
yeah, man. Let's appreciate the ones who are still here.
Yeah, dude. Real talk. You want to see something else hella random? I branded the Flavor Flav over the weekend.
Shut up! That's my dream. That's all I want to do is run into Flavor Flav and just give him a hug. Listen, that's another one. I know Flavor's never going to be thought of as anybody's favorite rapper because he's really not a rapper.
Oh, he's iconic, though.
He's just the greatest hype man of all time. But, hey, man, the fact that Flavor Flav is still with us is a fucking miracle.
Yeah.
Because you want to talk about somebody that was headed down the path of self-destruction. Little rap fun there I just had. But oh man, all I want to do is meet Flavor Flav and hang out with him and tell him how much I love him.
This dude was rolling with a He was rolling in a white Mercedes-Benz limousine.
Of course. I wouldn't expect anything less. This tracks. Go on.
A white Mercedes-Benz limo right out front of our venue. And I just randomly looked in, and I'm like, wait a minute. And he's with a couple of white chicks too. So he stood
again,
out.
This
he
stood tracks. Up. Go on.
And I said, oh shit, Flay, what's up, man? And he said, yo.
I love him so much. Yo! I love him so much.
Like, you are the shit, man. I have to say that my all-time favorite hip-hop group was Public Enemy. Is Public Enemy.
I mean, listen, man. Flavor Flav and Chuck D mean so much to me. I could talk about them for an entire show. So
you and I both.
There's a really good documentary. They are now two episodes in. I believe it's four episodes. It's on PBS. It's called Fight the Power. It's a story of hip hop and activism.
Yeah.
And Chuck D is in it and executive producing it and all over it. If you haven't watched it, I suggest you do. Again, it's on PBS, so it's free. Public Enemy's importance to me and many others cannot be overstated. I learned more about the Black experience from Public Enemy than I did from 12 years of public education, which is not a surprise because we don't teach the proper Black history in this country for reasons that we all understand why they don't.
And they don't want to teach that.
And they don't teach it.
It's so funny. Yeah, I feel the same way about PE. They, as a 16, 17, 18-year-old, they were incredibly influential on me.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly influential. And it opened my eyes to a lot of things. It actually opened my eyes to learning more about the things that aren't taught in school. I actually, because of Public Enemy, I went and did research on my own.
Yep.
And got into some other books, like, okay,
yep,
so this, yep, they can tell us this.
Yep.
And it's, yep, so strange that they're still trying to do that to an even greater degree.
Yeah, to an even more insidious degree. Yeah. And we've talked about this before. Ron DeSantis, head fascist in Florida, trying to be the uber fascist president of the United States in 2024, outlawing AP African American studies classes in Florida universities. I'm sure we'll talk about that again.
Mm-hmm.
But that guy there is a special place in hell for Ron DeSantis and people like him. It's funny. You got me thinking about Public Enemy. And you and I had the exact same experience. You learned something from Public Enemy.
Yep.
And then you were like, oh, they're not telling us this. I need to do some research. And then when you do some research about the topic you learned from Public Enemy, you go, well, what else are they not teaching us?
Yeah.
You know, and then you end up kind of doing a deep dive or going down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And then you just, like, Public Enemy, they're unique in that regard.
Yeah.
I say it with confidence, they're the only hip hop group that were able to get people to do what we did, which is they would say something and they would spark some curiosity in your brain to make you go do research. They made you do homework.
Yeah.
That's how good Public Enemy was. Yeah. They made you go do fucking homework, but it was important homework about the Black and African American experience in this country. I mean, if you, that's how you know those guys are cooking with gas, because no one else had the power to do that.
One of the great moments of my little life, and I never fan out about anything, but the fact I was on Twitter one day and I crack open my Twitter and Chuck D is following me, and I almost pissed my pants.
That's the only reason I'm on Twitter, Marcus, is to get. I'm serious. I've anti Twitter for so long, but now I'm in it.
Yeah.
Because I want Chuck D to follow me. The day Chuck D follows me will be one of the happiest days of my life. I am very thirsty in trying to get his attention on Twitter. It is almost shameful how slutty I am trying to get Chuck D's attention on Twitter.
Well, one of the great voices in hip hop ever, by the way.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
He, as a matter of fact, he and Flavor Flav.
Yeah. And it was just that's another part of Public Enemy's genius is sonically, they understood what they needed to do because they knew their message was heavy, but they had to do something sonically to get your attention and keep your attention. If it's just Chuck D, it's a little bit too much. It's a little bit too heavy. It's a little bit too preachy because that baritone is, it's like your dad talking to you.
Yeah.
But the genius of Public Enemy is that they realize, and other groups have realized this too.
Sure.
If you have a low, you got to have a high.
Yep.
And who's the high in Public Enemy? It's Flavor Flav. And Tom Morello said this perfectly. The fantastic guitarist of Rage Against the Machine said, Flavor Flav is the spoonful of sugar that makes the medicine of Chuck D that makes it go down. You had the low of Chuck D with the knowledge and the high of Flavor Flav with the comedy, but he was also throwing some of that knowledge back at you. And then obviously, you know, just sonically the music, the sound of Public Enemy, you know, they knew how to use that, you know, almost like a sword, like a scalpel at times. Like I said, I could go on and on about Public Enemy, but
you and me both.
Their impact is undeniable. Still to this day.
Dude, most people don't realize Flavor Flav plays multiple instruments.
Flavor Flav is a very good musician.
Multiple. I was watching this dude play piano. I'm like, good God, you're amazing.
I've seen Flavor Flav pull off a drum solo in concert. And listen, I'm a drummer. No one wants a drum solo, okay? But he made it work. he made it work. Flavor Flav is a very, very good drummer. Flavor Flav is a very, very good musician. He is also a certifiable crazy person.
I'm glad he's still alive. Chuck D, Flavor Flav. I love talking about those dudes. I could definitely talk about those cats all day long.
Man, without a doubt.
Let me look at what else we got on our agenda here.
Shall we get to the world of sports?
Oh my God. Of course, because we just had the Super Bowl.
Yep. I told you KC was going to win, man. I told you KC in the points. When are you going to listen to me when it comes to football-related matters?
Yeah. no one should be surprised by the outcome of that. And I think I picked the Eagles last week, and even then I was like, yeah, it's probably KC, but let me go ahead and pick the Eagles just to be different. This dude, Patrick Mahomes, is incredible.
Yeah, man.
And Rod, that might not even be a good enough superlative. Like, the things that he's able to do is just insane to me. I've never seen any quarterback play like this, period, ever, point blank.
He started for 5 years. He's played in 3 Super Bowls. He's won two Super Bowl MVPs and 2 or 3, I forget exactly how many, league MVPs in 5 years.
Isn't this how Brady started out?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. I don't think he's had that many trips to the Super Bowl and the wins and the league MVPs. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Yeah. I feel like he came
out the box. But Patrick Mahomes is on that fast track too.
Oh, listen. This is one of the very, 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 very few players I believe can carry a team almost by himself.
Yeah.
It's a very, very, very – because as football is the ultimate team sport, and with a trash offensive line, if he's got – even with a – because that year that they got spanked by Tampa Bay, they probably had no business being there.
Their offensive line was not good. And in Tampa, in their infinite – not Tampa, Kansas City, in their infinite wisdom, spent a lot of draft capital and a lot of actual capital on improving that offensive line. And how good was that Tampa – or I keep doing it. How good was that Kansas City offensive line
Man.
In the Super Bowl
Man.
Against an Eagles team?
Man.
Sacked the quarterback over 70 times over the course of the regular season. Kansas City's offensive line gave up zero sacks in the Super Bowl.
Insane.
Not one.
And I should have looked, but I don't know how often I actually see Mahomes get sacked. There's lots of near misses. I can't even say that I see him get sacked much. And I should go and check the numbers, but I don't even think he gets that. I mean, that's part of his skill.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, sacks and the inability to get sacked, that's not just an offensive line
right.
metric.
Right.
You know, we've seen quarterbacks run themselves into sacks, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Or and hold the ball for too long and get a sack.
Jimmy Garoppolo. And we've seen guys have the ability to get out of sack situations. But the trick is that there's a fine line between running out of a sack and running out of a big play or good play. And that's the thing with Patrick Mahomes that he clicked in pretty early is that, yes, you could clearly see he's an athlete. Mm-hmm. He has quickness in short spaces. He has burst. He has a little bit of speed. You know, he's got a bit of deceptive speed, but he was never a run first quarterback from the time he got into the league. He was a guy that used his athletic ability to make sure that he was always looking downfield and try to get the ball out and downfield. For him to have that click as quickly as he did and to be paired with a very, very good coach in Andy Reid, that's why the Chiefs right now, they are football's version of the Golden State Warriors.
These guys,
everybody else is shooting for second place.
Pretty much. Like it's really difficult to say the Chiefs won't do anything at this point year after year. You have to have them as a contender every single year as long as that dude is playing.
I mean, absolutely.
The fact that they can get out there and get to the Super Bowl with all the injuries they sustained to their starters, potentially in the receiving side. Get out there and spank people. This dude is a magician. And by the way, Rod, we also have to show a huge nod of appreciation for Jalen Hurts. Because dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's for real.
H-Town, baby. Well, specifically Channel View, but Houston is definitely claiming Jalen Hurts. Please believe that.
Like Alabama.
And Oklahoma. No, Jalen Hurts was special.
Yeah.
Good for that young man, even though he went to Alabama. I always had a respect for him that went beyond the fact that we grew up in the same area. I always liked his demeanor. Very cool, very calm, not showy, doesn't do a lot of talking.
Yeah.
I always liked his get down. I hated him at Alabama because he was just so good until he wasn't good. But Jalen Hurts has always been cool with me, and to see him grow. Because listen, if it's not Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts is the league MVP.
Yep.
And if it's not Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts is the Super Bowl champion,
yep,
and more than likely the Super Bowl MVP,
yep,
because he did play that well.
Hell of a game by him. He actually exceeded my expectations because honestly, I didn't think he'd be able to throw much.
Mm-hmm.
To be completely frank with you. That was my whole thinking was like, I don't know how injured. I felt like both these guys are injured. I don't know how injured either of them are. But Jalen Hurts, man, that's a dude who you're going to have to contend with for a number of years. The Eagles are another team. As long as that guy is there, it looks like they found a real one in Jalen Hurts.
No, I completely agree with you. And it because of Jalen Hurts, to me, the Eagles are an easy team to root for.
Mm-hmm.
I just when you think about quarterbacking in this league now and where it's going, I think it's going to be okay. You know, you got no Tom Brady. You probably only got one more year of Aaron Rodgers. But Josh Allen, obviously Patrick Mahomes,
yeah,
Jalen Hurts, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Trevor
Lawrence and Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
Those five guys.
Yeah.
And
Lamar Jackson is still out there too.
Lamar Jackson. I'll throw Tua in there. You know, I know he's got his shortcomings, but I'll throw Tua in there. You know, whatever happens with the Niners and Trey Lance and Brock Purdy, I'll be generous and throw one of those guys in there. I think the league quarterbacking wise, not that anybody was worried about it, but I think the league is going to be okay.
Yeah, these more athletic QBs have actually made the game a lot more interesting. I love a good pocket passer, but it's something about having these dynamic quarterbacks, and it's not just the black quarterbacks who are doing. Like, you look at Josh Allen, and he's got he's good too. So, and Josh Allen is fun to watch. He's a fun guy to watch, but I really am impressed with Jalen Hurts, man, and I think that those Eagles are going to be in contention for years to come with that guy at the helm. I'm very happy for him.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Especially when
Absolutely.
they said he was a system quarterback.
What, at Alabama?
No, at with the Eagles.
Oh, really?
Who was it that said it? Micah Parsons.
Oh, fuck him.
Micah
Freaking, yeah,
Parsons.
but fuck him.
Micah Parsons. But there were people who
Oh,
were agreeing with him.
Jesus.
They were saying that, yeah. And then once Hurts went down, and you saw how the team functioned without him, it teaches you some things.
I remember Michael Parsons saying that. First off, Michael Parsons, Cowboys linebacker, edge rusher, a good player, a really good player, but just a world-class jackass.
He's a troll.
Wait, no, I don't think he's a troll. I just don't think he's very bright. I think he's one of these young cats that likes to get on Twitter and just likes to say a bunch of stuff when he shouldn't. Get on to like he said that he rooted for the Eagles because he wanted them to bring a Super Bowl championship to the division.
That's funny.
What the fuck is what is that?
That's old
You
school
want your
thinking.
division rival to, and you know what that is? That's just his way of saying, I want the Eagles to win the Super Bowl so people can say, oh, well, they beat us. We beat them. We went toe to toe with the Super Bowl champions. Like
That's
he's
funny.
clout chasing
That's
is
funny.
what he was doing. I saw through that real quick. He's also a guy when Brittany Griner got released
Oh, man.
in the prisoner swap,
This
he
guy.
said that because he comes from a military family,
Yeah.
he said that we gave up a Russian criminal for Brittany Griner. While a guy who has some military background, and I don't remember specifically right now, while that guy in essence still rots in a Russian prison. He just tweeted that out without any of the facts on any of that situation. And
Yeah.
also Google Michael Parsons Penn State football hazing and sexual assault, and you'll learn a lot more about that guy. So fuck him
Yeah,
sideways.
and let's not forget that military man was a fucking criminal.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
Right.
so let's
Yeah.
don't get it twisted now. Just because you're in
No,
the
no.
military don't mean you.
Michael Parsons is just a child that spends far too much time on Twitter.
Yeah.
He just happens to be a very talented child playing football.
Last week as we were closing, we were talking about the trade of James Wiseman. And
Yes.
since then, I've heard a lot of talk about James Wiseman, and to be honest with you, I'm really surprised that people are so upset that Wiseman has been traded. And they're like, "The Warriors should have kept him. They ruined him because they should have adapted their system to him to suit his skills, and they don't develop players." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" James Wiseman wasn't good enough. Do you really think this dude who's 7'1", who's athletic, if he was really good, you think they'd just be not playing the dude? Get the fuck out of here. He wasn't good enough. He played no defense. None. He was awful. And just because he would have a few moments of brilliance on the court, he would flash a few times and he'd get you all excited. The fact of the matter is, Wiseman couldn't play on this team.
He couldn't play on that team. He
Yeah.
couldn't play
Yeah.
on the Golden State
Yeah.
Warriors. He made his debut with the Pistons last night, and his plus minus numbers, I think he was minus 11, and that's not good. However, he did have double digit points, and he needs to rebound a lot more. I want to see he had
Five boards.
five boards.
Yeah.
That he's too big to only have five boards. He should be
Bro.
running up in the eight territory. But he wasn't a fit with the Warriors. The knee injury hampered him,
Yeah.
hampered his development. The Warriors competing for and eventually winning that championship last year without him, made him expendable. I think it crushed his confidence. I think it started the real sort of internal roiling dialogue between the pro-Wiseman faction inside the Warrior organization and the anti-Wiseman faction inside the Warrior organization. He wasn't a good fit on the court with Steph, and I probably should have led with that. I don't care who you are. If you ain't a good fit on the court with Steph, your time with the Warriors is cooked.
and that's absolutely 100% right. And the thing that bothered me most, and believe me, I want Wiseman to do well. I'm still rooting for Wiseman. I wanted to see him play more. But every time I watch him play, I'm like, God, dude, what are you doing? He's one of these guys, and here's the difference between him and Jonathan Kuminga. If you want to play on this team with this pedigree, you need to be able to do your job.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
And you need to be able to go out there and play defense. Mm-hmm. If you play defense, you will always have time on the court.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
And Wiseman was always focused on trying to score. Yep. I remember a few more instances where you saw Steph get visibly pissed off because Wiseman didn't get him the goddamn ball. And Kuminga was doing a lot of that at first, and he learned. And as soon as he started playing defense, he got more time. And he could fit. It's whether or not you choose to listen to the direction. At 7'1", you need to be rebounding much better.
I think, though, still, if he didn't get hurt and he has more time on the court and he has more time to make mistakes, I think he's around. I think the knee injury – you could say it delayed the inevitable, and the inevitable being that he just wasn't not a fit on the court with Steph, so he had to go. But I think that that's a problem that if you get to it early, like they did with Kuminga, you can get that problem stamped out and get it out of the way. Because as a big in the Warriors system, you need to set screens for Steph and Klay, for that matter, and Poole, but you need to set screens. You need to rebound. You need to play your individual defensive position and assignment, and you have to block shots. You need to be a rim protector. And Wiseman, at barely 20, 21 years old, did not do that for whatever reason. I will say this, as we are now coming up on the All-Star break as we tape this, when it comes to defense, the way the Warriors have played this season over half the games, it's not just James Wiseman that wasn't playing defense. The Warriors are not playing defense up to their normal standards.
No,
that's not just a James Wiseman problem.
No, not at all. It's been awful from day one. They've been a sieve. It's insane. Like some of the stuff I watched them do, like the rotations are terrible. They're always late. I literally watch dudes just get out of the way to let dudes get to the basket.
Olé!
Yet they foul at an alarming rate, but they let guys just go right to the hole. I watched them play, who was it? Who were they playing the other day? And I can't tell you how many times I just watch cats go right to the basket. They get out-rebounded. I watch dudes sit there and watch, wait for other dudes to get rebounds. There's not a lot of hustle. And I don't know what it is. I also believe that this is my own theory when it comes to young basketball players, is they have their own agendas when they're young. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what coaches say to them, no matter what anybody says to them, they have their own agendas. Really difficult to get those dudes to do what you do. I think that's what happened with Wiseman. I think Kuminga is the only person who caught on to it. I think Moody, who the Warriors' second year shooting guard, I think he's just. I think he's the one who actually tries the hardest, but just can't get there.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you. It's. You know, this might be getting too deep in the weeds with the Warriors, but the two timeline thing, you know, to have the older players, still play at a high level, but age out at the same time that the young players are trying to figure it out, but hopefully grow at a pace where they can play with the older players and there's a seamless melding together and then an eventual transition when Steph, Klay, and Draymond you know, eventually age out of the process. That just didn't work. They tried it, and it seems as though the Warriors have a 33% success rate.
Yeah.
They tried three guys with Kuminga, Wiseman, and Moody, and Kuminga seems to be the only guy, as you mentioned, that they've hit on and is working with Steph, Clay, and Draymond, where you could keep him on the floor.
Yeah.
I give Moody an incomplete grade, but I'm with you. I'm leaning more towards that's just not going to hit. And clearly with Wiseman gone, that's an X in that category. So, you know, one out of three.
Not bad.
Meatloaf said two out of three ain't bad. Yeah. But I think for the Warriors, if they would have gotten two out of three, they'd be pretty ecstatic about it.
Yeah, I mean.
So you gotta live with the one.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what most people's hit rate is when it comes to draft picks. You're lucky.
Yeah, right.
One of them hits and you're excited. I mean,
no doubt.
If everybody could do it, nobody would ever have losing records.
Moving on to some silliness, some randomness.
Yeah.
I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I warned you, Marcus, that I am obsessed with this story. And for the uninitiated, the story is a spate of monkey nappings at the Dallas Zoo. Not just monkey nappings, but animal nappings.
Yeah.
The monkeys that we talked about, a couple, I believe, of tamarin monkeys were stolen, yet eventually recovered, and they are healthy. They are happy. They are back at the zoo doing whatever tamarin monkeys do at the zoo. I'm assuming eat, have sex, and throw feces. Perfect life. Absolutely. Not too far away from what I do. But we found out that the there was a young man who had taken an interest in these animals, and he was the one that was responsible for the monkey napping. He was also responsible for letting the cloud leopard out of its enclosure at the Dallas Zoo. And the young man, they called him, young brother, they caught him. And he said, and this is a quote that I'm going to paraphrase, but the young man said this. He admitted to stealing the monkeys.
Yep.
And he said, if given the opportunity, he would do it again.
Come on.
I swear to God, that's what he said. And by the way, here's another bit of information. Do you know where they caught the young brother who was responsible for the monkey nappings?
Where?
Do you know where they caught him? At an aquarium in Dallas. So apparently he was casing that joint and he was going to steal some fish, which I kind of want to know. I really wish he would have done it. Hopefully there would have been no harm to the fish he was trying, but I want to know how you go pull that off, brother. Were you going to just get a rock and break open an aquarium?
That's hilarious.
Was he going to dive in?
He's going to pull up the old fishing rod.
He was going to get a rod and reel. So, and you know, and again, it kind of tracks because what are aquariums if they are just not simple fish zoos?
That's what it is.
So anyway, I bring all this up to say a couple of weeks later, after the Dallas monkey nappings, you had someone in Houston cut open an enclosure for, I forget what it was. I don't know if it was another monkey.
Yeah.
But or if it was a big cat or something like that. But there was another animal enclosure that had been disturbed, that had been cut open at the Houston Zoo. So apparently, Marcus,
good God,
this is a Texas problem.
Good God.
Where these animals are now under siege from people who are looking to make off with them. And so since this is a problem that I've identified, and it seems to be a Texas problem, Marcus, I have a very Texas solution.
What are we talking?
To this Texas animal napping at the zoo problem. It's very simple, Marcus. You got to arm the animals. You got to give them guns. You got to get a monkey's guns.
All right? They got to protect themselves.
You got to get a gorilla's guns.
That's
okay?
Funny as fuck.
They're the ones with opposable thumbs, so they're the ones you can easily train.
That's
but
funny.
But if we going to keep having people go to these zoos in Houston and Dallas and other Texas cities trying to make off with the animals, then the animals got to be strapped.
That is fucking hilarious. Of course. It is the only real solution. This feels more like a Florida problem than a Texas problem, but okay. Okay.
I think if it were a Florida problem, the animals would be given illegal drugs. Like the monkeys would be on bath salts, or you know, the gorillas would be dealing cocaine or something
so
like that.
Let me ask you, did this dude have a motive?
No, man. He was just a young brother that I mean, I think, and this is just a guess on my part, I think there might be something I don't want to say wrong with him. I think some mental health counseling would be good for this young man. He seems to just want to really be close to these animals without thinking about A, the danger you're putting the animals in, and also the danger he's putting himself in. Because let's just say that snow leopard that he let out, let's just say that snow leopard was about that life.
Man.
Snow leopard would have fucked that kid up.
Yeah, dude.
that snow leopard would have mixed his shit, man.
Yeah, you are not lying.
So I think he's just a special young man that doesn't understand boundaries.
At all,
which is why he's cutting open these enclosures and why he made away with those two monkeys.
Before we get out of here, I want to touch on this little thing I came across. It just tickled me. There's this YouTuber named iShowStream, and I guess he's super popular, and I guess he's built a big following. This dude is a gigantic Drake fan, the rapper Drake, for those who have been living under a rock the last 15 years. He's a gigantic Drake fan. He apparently managed to book Drake on his show as a guest. I actually watched the entire thing. He got Drake on as a guest, and Drake's appearance lasted barely 2 minutes. He got on the show, and all he could do is gush over Drake. And he's, man, you're the best. I love you. You're the greatest. Blah, 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 blah. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here, et cetera, et cetera. And that's literally how the first 2 minutes of the thing goes. And Drake is really like, yeah, man, I appreciate it. I admire what you've done with your social media, with your YouTube channel, et cetera. I really think it's great. And your boy goes, now, Drake, your voice is so sexy. And Drake goes, click, disappears. Like, just like that. It was so funny. And dude lost his shit. He said, oh, I fucked up. I didn't mean to say it like that. I didn't mean to say it like that. I meant to say, oh, I didn't mean to say his voice was sexy. Drake was like, I'm out. It is so funny. It's so funny. I never heard of this dude before. I'd never seen him before. I just saw the story. I watched the video, and it is hilarious how quickly the tide changed on this dude.
That ain't right. Because if that's a woman, Drake is all sniggling and giggling. I'm not going to do a Drake impression.
Yeah.
But talking about, oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. You sexy too, Ma. Just because it's a dude call your voice sexy, Drake, that's a little bit too much for you? Oh, come on, man.
That's hilarious. This dude hit eject so fast. He smiled, and then all of a sudden he was gone. And your boy was beside himself. I said it wrong.
I will say, I mean, you know, you kind of slide that in later on in the conversation.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
You need to get more of a feel for Drake.
Yeah.
Before you start to compliment another man on a sexy voice.
Dude, it's when you go fanboy, these dudes get out of control. It's so funny to see guys fanboy out.
I'll fanboy out over Chuck D if I meet him. I'm not going to say his voice is sexy.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely going to fanboy out. I'm intrigued by these dudes who fanboy out over Drake specifically. I need to understand. I don't understand his appeal to dudes. To women, I completely understand it. I get it.
You know,
his appeal to guys, to heterosexual guys, I'll never understand.
The genius of Drake is that he has, I mean, obviously longevity is a big deal, especially in hip-hop, because nobody really gets past 3 or 4 albums in hip-hop really successfully. Mm-hmm. I think the genius of Drake is that he came out almost like LL Cool J, or like, remember Big Daddy Kane? It came out hard like that.
Yeah.
And then slowly they metamorphosis into Mr. Sexy Man.
But see, here's the thing, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but just from my point of view, I don't ever, ever recount a time where I looked at Drake and went, yo, that's a rough and tumble brother. You know what I mean? Like with Kanye, like when he first came out, like, okay, he seemed like he's street. I know that, you know, he's college dropout and he's not being a gangster, but there was something about Kanye when he first hit, like, okay, that's a brother from the urban environment, just to sort of pick a catch-all phrase. Never once with Drake, especially at the beginning, did I think that's a brother from an urban environment. That doesn't mean he can't do hip-hop. That doesn't mean that he's not hip-hop. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have some intrinsic hip-hop value. He does. He's not my type of hype. Mm-hmm. But clearly, man, he's a guy that has carved out a very wide and successful and lucrative lane, and good for him on that. But at no point in time did I ever look at that dude and go, could that guy kick my ass in my ass? No.
I think it really helped him that he got put on by Lil Wayne. Like, Lil Wayne was the guy.
Yeah.
That does it.
Okay, that association, I get that. That association does give you a great deal of street cred.
Yeah, him and at the same, it was at Nicki Minaj, who also has become a pop star too. Yeah. But at the time, Drake, I'm not Drake, Lil Wayne and Nicki were like
tight. I remember that.
And you bring in this new kid, Drake.
I get it. Obviously, I get it.
Everybody's going to jump on his bandwagon.
Okay. I forgot about the Lil Wayne tie-in. That makes a lot more sense now.
I'm looking for Wayne here in New Orleans, but he ain't never coming.
Nah, I don't think he really. I don't think he really fuck with New Orleans no more, man.
Nope, he don't. He said it. And it's funny because we got to go. I know, but it's interesting to hear New Orleans MCs talk about leaving New Orleans. They're like, I had to get out of there.
It's dangerous, dude.
I had to get out of there.
And this kind of takes us full circle. You know, we were talking about Plug 2, Trugoy, from De La Soul passing away. You know, obviously it was from natural causes. It wasn't from violence or anything of that nature. But think about the rappers we've lost over the past few years. Young Dolph is the first person I think of where they either go back to their hometowns or they leave their hometowns. And because of, you know, guns and jealousy and testosterone, rappers are either killed or they are assaulted or whatever in their own hometowns. There's a certain amount of jealousy there. So that's a thing where you have to leave your home behind because there are people, just because it's your home, that doesn't mean that everybody there loves you.
Oh, I think that it ratchets up the jealousy and the hate. When you, especially especially if you're somebody who's out there flexing too, like you gotta tone it down. Like
golf. Yeah.
The fact that Big Freedia is still out here and hasn't left, still here in New Orleans, I'm actually very surprised. But Freedia might leave at some point too. So it's an interesting thing. You don't really think about it very much. You believe that Too Short ended up leaving Oakland.
Yep.
I mean, which is crazy to me. But he ended up leaving Oakland. So I get it. You got to leave sometimes because too many people actually know you.
Yep.
And know where you live.
Can I tell you my real problem with Lil Wayne?
Yeah, go ahead.
I hate the fact that he's a Packers fan and not a Saints fan.
Dude.
That's bullshit.
He's one of those dudes. I hate to talk about celebrity fandom, but it's like, is he really a Packers fan, though? Is he a fan of anybody? Is he a fan of somebody who happens to be winning?
I know he's not a fan of the team that is from his hometown.
Yeah, that's
from the New Orleans Saints.
That's nonsense. I mean, I'm sorry. That's just nonsense.
Packers play the Saints, and he's back in the Packers now. Yes, is it because of Aaron Rodgers? Is it because the Packers, you know, have a winning tradition, if you will? Whatever the reason, how you gonna be a Packers fan
for real?
And you from New Orleans, Louisiana?
For real.
You could be cool with Aaron Rodgers. You could be cool with the Packers,
but
he calls himself a Packers fan. And when the Packers and the Saints play, and I believe they played in the playoffs, and they play games of significance, you rock with the Packers and not the Saints.
Well,
ooh.
Now you know why it's not safe for him to come to town.
And on that note, it's been another quality hang, not just the name of this podcast. It is what we do. You can follow us on all of the socials at Quality Hang Pod, and you can email us qualityhangpod@gmail.com. All right, my man, I hope this, on this last weekend of Mardi Gras leading up to Fat Tuesday, I hope you can find time for a parade, you know, man, get some beads, show your boobs, and have a good time, man. Go to a parade.
I'm going to show, give it a shot, brother. That's for sure.
All right, my man. Let's do it again next week, shall we?
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Once again, we thank you for listening. We absolutely appreciate it. And take care of yourselves and be good, or at least be good at it. We'll see you.